Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Susan Shand and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, a Thai government official says all 12 boys and their coach are doing well after their rescue from the Tam Luang cave. Thongchai Lotwilai Ratanapong is a Thai public health inspector. He told the Associated Press Wednesday that the boys lost about 2 kilograms of weight during their time in the cave. He said they survived by drinking clean water dripping into the cave. 4 boys were rescued Sunday, and another 4 were guided to safety on Monday. The remaining 4 boys and their coach were pulled out Tuesday. The first photographs of the boys recovering in a Chiang Rai hospital were released Wednesday. It showed that many of them appeared to be in good condition. Some made the 2-finger victory sign from their hospital beds. The photos also showed parents of the boys looking at their children through a glass window. The parents have reportedly only been able to see their children through windows as they recover. All 12 boys are being kept away from family members to prevent them from catching infections. 3 of the boys are being treated for minor lung infections. Chaiwich Tanapasan is director of Chiang Rai Prachanakro Hospital. He said, "Don't need to worry about their physical health, and even more so for their mental health. Despite their mostly good health, all the boys need to be observed in the hospital for 7 days and then rest at home for another 30 days. Thai Navy SEALs also posted photos and a video of some of their operations in the cave on their Facebook page Wednesday. 13 international cave divers joined 5 Thai Navy SEALs in the dangerous rescue operation. Former Thai Navy SEAL Samangunan died last Friday while putting extra air tanks along the escape path. He ran out of air while trying to swim out of the cave. Narangsak Osatanakon is the official who oversaw the rescue operation. He praised the cooperation between Thai and international rescuers. He said, "The situation went beyond just being a rescue mission and became a symbol of unity among man." He added that everyone worked together without concerns about race or religion, as the goal was to save the young football team. None of the 12 boys had ever been diving, and some did not know how to swim. 2 divers were helping each one make his way through very small passages filled with water. It took the divers about 8 hours to get into the cave, reach the boys, and bring them back out.
United States Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh started working to secure his place on the High Court Tuesday. Kavanaugh is meeting with senators to ask for their support. The U.S. Senate votes on nominees to be justices on the Supreme Court. a simple majority is required. President Donald Trump selected Kavanaugh to replace retiring 81-year-old Justice Anthony Kennedy. It is likely to be one of the more important decisions of his presidency. There is no one in America more qualified for this position or more deserving, the president said. Trump spoke during the television announcement of the nomination from the White House East Room on Monday. He called Kavanaugh a brilliant jurist who has devoted his life to public service. The 53-year-old Kavanaugh has served as a federal judge for 12 years, and he has been part of some highly disputed legal cases. Before he was a judge, he ran an investigation into the death of a deputy advisor to President Bill Clinton. It was ruled a suicide, but some people dispute this. Later, he worked on Bill Clinton's impeachment over a sexual relationship with a White House intern. He also took part in legal action over the vote recount in the state of Florida during the 2000 presidential election. He later joined the administration of President George W. Bush. Trump's choice was met with predictable reactions from Republicans and Democrats. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell called Kavanaugh an impressive nominee who is well qualified to sit on the nation's highest court. Iowa Republican Chuck Grassley, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, called him a candidate worthy of the Senate's consideration. Grassley's committee will hold hearings on Kavanaugh's nomination before it goes to a vote before the full Senate. Democrats are worried that Kavanaugh will join with the court's other four conservative members to reverse legalized abortion in the United States. Abortion became legal in 1973 in a famous case known as Roe v. Wade. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer has promised to protect abortion rights. He said he would work to defeat Kavanaugh, in his words, with everything I have. Other Democrats are worried about Kavanaugh's written opinion that a president should not face legal action for a crime while in office. They believe that special counsel Robert Mueller may try to make the president testify in his investigation of the Trump campaign's possible links to Russia. They say Trump might be accused of a crime. The case would then go to the Supreme Court. I'm Susan Shand.
The world's very first photographs were taken in the 1830s. Scientists now say they have found a way to recover lost images made from the very first photographic process. The new method uses X-ray technology and light imaging to help save images badly damaged by the effects of age. Researchers from Canada's University of Western Ontario published a report on their findings. The first widely accepted photographic process was the creation of France's Louis Daguerre in 1839. Images made by this method were called daguerreotypes. The process involved combining metal particles and chemicals on a silver-covered piece of copper to reflect or give back images of light. This reflective process was able to produce sharp, colorless pictures. In the beginning, the technology required people to sit completely still for at least 1 minute for the process to capture a photograph. The daguerreotype first made it possible to capture and save true images that presented a realistic look at history. This is because, unlike paintings, daguerreotypes reflected exactly what was photographed. But over time, daguerreotypes may suffer damage because of environmental conditions, such as heat and bright light. Some of the damaged images can become unrecognizable. Research chemists at Western University say they have found a high-tech way to bring these photographic treasures back to life. The team developed the process over several years while studying the chemical changes that harm daguerreotype images. The team used X-ray technology to map and examine daguerreotype plates from the 19th century. The process is designed to identify the levels and position of mercury particles on the plates. Western University's Tsung Kong, or T.K. Sham, was one of the lead researchers on the project. He says mercury is necessary to creating photographic imagery. While the surface may be heavily damaged, the mercury particles remain. By looking at the mercury, we can retrieve the image in great detail, he said. Researchers said the X-ray imaging process takes about 8 hours on each daguerreotype plate. When complete, full images can be recovered, even if they could not be seen at all before. The research chemists showed how their process helped restore two images from the collection of the National Gallery of Canada. Those photos, which experts say could have been created as early as 1850, were tarnished so badly they were unrecognizable. Madalena Kozachuk helped lead the research. She is studying to earn a doctorate of philosophy in Western University's Department of Chemistry. Kozachuk said that she was surprised when the image first appeared after being hidden behind time for many years. "But then we see it, and we can see such fine details, the eyes, the folds of the clothing, the detailed embroidered patterns of the tablecloth," she said. The researchers say they did not find evidence that any part of the process damaged the 19th century plates. Photography experts estimate that millions of daguerreotype images may have been created over 20 years in the 19th century. Eventually, the process was replaced with other methods. By improving the process of restoring these centuries-old images, the scientists are contributing to the historical record, the university said in a statement. What was thought to be lost, showing the life and times of people from the 19th century, can now be found. The researchers say this new way to recover lost images without damaging effects will help museums breathe new life into some of their oldest image collections. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. In December 1941, the United States was at war. It declared war against Japan after Japanese pilots attacked the American naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. A few days later, Germany and Italy declared war against the United States. President Franklin Roosevelt quickly decided that America could not fight major campaigns in the Pacific and in Europe at the same time. He and his advisors decided to fight first against the Germans and Italians. Then, when victory in Europe seemed sure, the United States could turn to fight the Japanese in Asia. This left the Japanese free to extend their power throughout Asia and the Western Pacific. Soon after the attack at Hawaii, Japanese forces invaded Hong Kong, Malaya, and the Philippines. American forces in the Philippines suffered heavy losses, and Manila fell to Japanese troops. In February 1942, Japan's forces won a great victory against the British in Singapore. Japanese forces marched into Burma. They attacked Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, and captured the Andaman Islands in the Bay of Bengal. The Japanese military forces seemed too strong to stop. President Roosevelt sent some forces to the Pacific, and he began to rebuild the American naval forces destroyed at Pearl Harbor. But he sent most of America's military strength to Europe. The United States rushed troops and war equipment to help Britain survive against Adolf Hitler's Germany. American military leaders wanted to fight Germany quickly by launching an attack across the English Channel. But British Prime Minister Winston Churchill opposed this. He and others feared such an invasion might fail. So British and American forces attacked Italian and German occupation troops in North Africa. They defeated them and then crossed the Mediterranean Sea to attack enemy forces in Sicily. Within weeks, they pushed the Germans out of Sicily to the Italian mainland. The Allied invasion of Italy followed. Hitler could not strengthen his forces in North Africa and Italy because Germany also was fighting hard in the Soviet Union. Hitler's decision early in the war to attack the Soviet Union was a serious mistake. It divided his men and materials. His plan was to defeat Soviet forces quickly with one strong attack. But he failed, and his failure cost him valuable troops and supplies that might have helped him win the battles for North Africa and Italy. Germany's attack on the Soviet Union began with great success. In the middle of 1941, a German force of more than 3 million men invaded the Soviet Union. It captured the Ukraine, took control of Kiev, and marched deep into Russia. The situation changed the following year. Soviet forces under Marshal Georgi Zhukov won a fierce battle for the city of Stalingrad, now Volgograd. A great many German soldiers died from cold and hunger during the bitter winter months that followed. Zhukov's forces attacked the German troops and pushed back the invaders. Other Soviet troops forced the Germans away from the city of Leningrad, now St. Petersburg. By the middle of 1944, German forces throughout the Soviet Union were retreating, and Soviet forces were preparing to push them over the border and invade Germany themselves. The fighting came at a terrible cost. Huge numbers of soldiers and civilians were killed. The fighting in World War II was not limited to land. Battles were also being fought on the sea. The main goal of the German Navy during the war was to prevent the United States from sending ships to Britain with war materials, food, and troops. At first, the Germans were very successful. There was hunger in Britain in 1941 because so few ships could cross the North Atlantic with food. German submarines were the greatest danger to ships crossing the Atlantic. These U-boats, as the Germans called them, could hide below the surface and attack without warning. The threat from German submarines did not ease until new technology was developed in 1943. Allied scientists improved sonar and radar systems that helped find submarines on the surface and underwater. More of the enemy submarines were found and destroyed. The Allies slowly gained control of the Atlantic. Allied and German warships fought a number of traditional naval battles, but airplanes came to play an increasingly important part in the fighting at sea. British ships, with the help of planes launched from an aircraft carrier, destroyed a powerful German battleship, the Bismarck, on May 27, 1941. The most famous air battle of the war in Europe took place during the summer and autumn of the previous year. It was known as the Battle of Britain. It got its name from a speech to Parliament by Prime Minister Churchill following the evacuation of British and French forces from Dunkirk.
This is the BBC Home Service. Here is the news. In the House of Commons this afternoon, the Prime Minister, Mr. Churchill, said, "What General Vagar called the Battle of France is over. The Battle of Britain is about to begin."
It was the most extensive aerial bombing yet in the war. It was also the first battle to be fought entirely in the air. German Stuka dive bombers attacked shipping centers, areas of political importance, airfields, and airplane factories. Luftwaffe pilots in their Messerschmitts battled the Hurricanes and Spitfires of the Royal Air Force. While the flying skills of the German and British pilots were well matched, it was ultimately the greater maneuverability of the British Spitfire that won the long months of battle over the English Channel. The British victory in the air helped prevent Operation Sea Lion, a planned German invasion of Britain. In May of 1942, Britain's Royal Air Force carried out an attack on Germany with 1,000 bombers. It was just the first of many bombing runs over Germany and German-occupied areas by the air forces of Britain and the United States. The planes bombed German military and industrial centers. They also bombed civilian targets in an effort to demonstrate to the German people the price of Germany's aggression. The German cities of Cologne, Dresden, and Hamburg suffered widespread destruction. The Allied bombing attacks continued until the war's end in 1945. Hitler's victories in the early months of the war had struck fear into the hearts of people throughout the world. Hitler and his Axis allies had won battle after battle. They had captured most of Western Europe and invaded the Soviet Union. They had seized North Africa, and their submarines controlled the Atlantic. Germany continued to seem strong during the first months after the United States entered the war in Europe. But the situation began to change. German strength and control were greatest in November of 1942. After then, the mighty German military machine began to slow down. Germany and its Axis partner, Italy, suffered serious losses in the first 6 months of 1943. German losses were extremely heavy in the Soviet Union. 160,000 German troops died at Stalingrad, and more than 110,000 surrendered. American and British forces captured 250,000 German and Italian troops in North Africa. Many more thousands were killed or captured in Sicily and the Italian mainland. German submarines were being destroyed in the North Atlantic, allowing more Allied troops and supplies to reach Britain. By the end of 1943, Hitler and his armies no longer seemed so strong. But German forces continued to occupy France, Belgium, and much of the rest of Western Europe. Now the time had come for the Allies to invade German-held Europe from Britain. Allied forces planned the greatest military invasion in history to break the German control of Europe and win the war.
People of Western Europe, a landing was made this morning on the coast of France by troops of the Allied Expeditionary Force. This landing is part of a concerted United Nations plan for the liberation of Europe. Although the initial assault may not have been made in your own country, the hour of your liberation is approaching.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.